Hello everyone, my name is Alexa and you're listening to MedCurity Live. With me today I have Joe Galletly, CEO and co-founder of MedCurity. Today we'll be talking about privacy, security, and telemedicine amidst the current health climate. Thank you so much for joining me today, Joe.
Thank you for having me, Alexa. Looking forward to the conversation.
All right, so let's get started. So our first question today is kind of surrounding, obviously, the COVID pandemic that's really swept the nation and really the whole world. And ever since the COVID-19 pandemic, telemedicine has been the main form of virtual communication between patients and doctors. You know, doctors have used official telemedicine or Zoom or other formats. And in order to accommodate patients during the health crisis, several hospitals put a bit of a fast track on creating a telemedicine form of communication. And this kind of led to possibly breaking some security rule aspects of HIPAA. However, due to the pandemic, those violations are being temporarily overlooked by the OCR in order to put patient health first. My first question for you related to that is, what do you think the future of telemedicine is going to look like? Do you think that the OCR will ever return to HIPAA to the way it was by putting more restrictions on virtual health visits, or will they just keep it in the state that it is by putting patient health first? Because now we really don't know what the future of the coronavirus is going to be.
Well, Alexa, that's a great question. You're absolutely right. We've seen just tremendous growth in the adoption of telemedicine, and we've seen the federal government put several things in place, waivers and enforcement discretion in place to accommodate that and try to remove obstacles from being able to take care of patients safely during the pandemic. Everything that they did from the standpoint of a waiver or enforcement discretion from a HIPAA perspective was tied to the public healthcare emergency that we're in right now. So the public health emergency began in the beginning of January, and it's been extended. It's extended every 90 days, right, until they choose to not extend it. It's currently been extended until late October. And while we are in that public health emergency status, we have the grace around HIPAA enforcement, and we have some flexibilities in our telemedicine delivery. But as soon as that ends, there's been not any indication that that would be extended. And that's specific to the HIPAA requirements around this, right? So if you study that, you'd see that for the clinics that have looked into this and the hospitals looked into what they're allowed to do, they could use a platform that isn't necessarily to the standards that are typically required. So they may not do a business associate agreement with you, and they may not have the same level of auditing and encryption that are typically something you'd look for in your telemedicine vendor. So even FaceTime, WebEx, tools like that, Skype were allowed for this. So a lot of room to make it work, but there's no indication that that's going to be extended following the end of the public health emergency. On the other hand, other aspects of telemedicine, like the billing side of that, where they expanded what they would pay for, and this is more on the CMS side. So CMS said, hey, we will pay Medicare beneficiaries to receive telemedicine encounters. And they went from, you know, something along the lines of 14,000 Medicare beneficiaries would get a telemedicine visit a week. They went from that up to over 10 million have received telemedicine visits in the first about 4 months of this pandemic. So a huge increase in telemedicine delivery. And part of that was the fact that they were able to pay for it. And so the cost could be covered for healthcare organizations to provide telemedicine. So that tied to President Trump's executive order last month and a new rule from CMS, that looks like we will have pieces of that extended at least. They are going to continue to pay for telemedicine visits of many types. So they are looking to continue to make it something that is viable from a business standpoint, but the flexibility we have around how to secure that and how to protect that is going to snap right back to those standards that are in the HIPAA rule in the first place for how we protect patient information.
And that kind of leads me into my next question. So with an increased use of telemedicine, I think there's a lot more vulnerability for security breaches, especially since hospitals and healthcare organizations were sort of pushed into telemedicine and forced to make it in a really fast manner. And so my question for you is, what is one thing that you think health organizations can invest in right now to better protect their security? And that doesn't necessarily need to tie into telemedicine, although it can. But do you think that there's one thing in particular that comes to the top of your head that health organizations can focus on right now?
Well, it's an important question. This, you know, telemedicine is a big change, but it certainly wasn't the only change in the past months here following the beginning of this pandemic. So working employees working from home or other systems that have been adopted, changes in who we maybe exchange information with. There's been a lot of shifts in both systems and workflow for a lot of healthcare organizations. So what's really important right now is to take an overall view of the organization and essentially conduct a security risk analysis. As a HIPAA covered entity, we're required to conduct that security risk analysis on a regular basis already, but also when you've had significant change in the environment. So everything that's happened so far this year would likely qualify as that, and a security and privacy risk assessment would be stepping through all the areas where you're potentially vulnerable to exposed patient information and taking a look at the risk levels and say, have we introduced something new here that puts us at more risk? Have we covered all the bases that we're required to under the security rule? Have we captured a business associate agreement for each new partner and new vendor that we're working with and got that in place? And have we educated our employees on what expectations we have of them when they're working from home? And have we put privacy measures in place around the telemedicine encounters and where those are conducted and how they're conducted? There's probably, you know, well over 100 items like that that you'll want to step through and say, what have we changed here? And have we put ourselves at any more risk? What's our highest risk area and how do we close that out? So I think that's not only really required being covered entities, but I think that's probably one of the most important things you could do, because it's hard to identify, you know, a specific piece of technology or specific workflow that needs to change without really having an idea of the whole organization and what your current posture is right now. So it's a critical time to go through that security risk analysis.
Yeah, definitely. And it's really crazy how fast everything happened. I think that kind of threw a lot of people off. And when you're more focused on, I think a lot of people were really focused on what the government was saying was important, which is everyone's talking about health, health, health. Like you see flyers everywhere, you see posters everywhere about keeping yourself healthy. And then privacy and security and kind of that personal information, people didn't really think about it that much because everyone is expected nowadays to be very transparent and open about their health status and how they're doing physically. You know, there's temperature checks at colleges and certain restaurants or businesses. And, you know, everyone's expected to be able to be contact traced, where if you were in contact with someone who is sick, then you can, you know, be notified. So it's very different than it used to be a few years ago, where personal patient information was kind of kept in this private situation. Whereas nowadays, everyone's expected to be upfront in order to help, you know, the good of all, the good of every American citizen. And that leads me to my next question, which is, why should organizations even care about their patients' privacy during a time when health is becoming so transparent?
Well, I would want to point out here that there's a huge difference between an infectious disease situation and everything else involving personal health, right? So as soon as a patient or an individual is a threat to other people's health, some of the rules do change. And that's been from looking back at the origin of the HIPAA rule and everything in the original legislation. There's been this grace extended to situations where a patient in one way or another may be a threat to others. Now, everything around the ability that we have or the flexibility we have to say there's somebody on the fourth floor who has tested positive, or somebody has been to this location who has tested positive, all of that flexibility is couched in still reasonably protecting the identity of that person. So if at all possible, you don't want to use names, but you can actually share a diagnosis if it's something, again, that puts others in danger. So we just haven't had it be such a focal point, but that was definitely built into the original intent, continues to be the intent there. So absolutely, outside of infectious disease, for the most part, privacy is not, it's unchanged, it's still critical, it still has a lot of negative ramifications for a healthcare organization if they breach that. And then even directly related to COVID-19, all the guidance from the Office of Civil Rights and HHS has said anything that you have as an allowance here on how you operate and communicate has to be with still a reasonable effort to protect privacy. So it is different, and in some ways definitely can feel a lot more exposed. But fortunately, the legislation that we're under and the regulations we're under allowed for this and have some pretty clear guidance on it. And so just while we're in the public health emergency, there's some adjustments to it a little bit, but overall we have the same requirements to protect privacy in place. And as healthcare organizations, we're definitely held to a higher standard. It may be still important, of course, for employers and other types of organizations to protect confidentiality, but it may be different out how it's with, like you mentioned, with contact tracers and other types of agencies, how they conduct themselves in pursuing what diagnosis people have or where they've been. Healthcare organizations are held to a different standard under HIPAA. And so that still remains our guiding light for how we protect patient information.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like there's still this underlying myth that HIPAA has just been thrown out the door. Like, it's still something that I hear a lot or that I see a lot when doing research. And it's interesting because really all the OCR stated, which was very clear when they laid it out, was that when you are helping a patient diagnosed with COVID or you're trying to make an effort to stop the spread of COVID, you have to be able to share as little information as possible. And it's interesting because people think, oh, well, that means that HIPAA is no longer around. We don't need to follow it anymore. Or, you know, is HIPAA even a thing anymore? And it's just interesting to me because I think that people need to be talking about it a bit more because, you know, average American citizens are starting to feel very frustrated because they're believing that HIPAA is no longer in act and it makes them upset.
Yeah, I think I would just add to that, there are people working to protect and do this appropriately. There also is just a huge role in this for the compliance officer of an organization. And that might be somebody who wears a lot of hats or might be a focused, dedicated compliance officer. But whoever's responsible for the essentially being the privacy officer for the clinic or the hospital right now is so critical to be teaching staff what the responsibilities are, reminding them what the responsibilities are as care providers, and also auditing. As you're saying, as we look what happens in the environment, we definitely had folks we work with sharing that as they do audits, there's been, unfortunately, they can easily find people checking to see if a diagnosis came back on somebody that's in a different part of the building or somebody that they know and looking to see if they received the COVID-19 diagnosis response yet. So they've actually, in a number of organizations, they've had to start specially flagging what they call individuals under investigation. So folks that are currently waiting for a test result, they've had to flag those medical records and actually get proactive alerts when somebody views it. And unfortunately, it's resulting in people that have lost their jobs after being, you know, coached or reminded on this. And it also quite likely could be things that we see in the news as people complain about it to the Office of Civil Rights. And it's very clearly a breach still. So as you said, there's definitely maybe some feelings about this being just privacy being not taken seriously, but it is by those who are taking the role seriously that they have and that are following up and managing this. And they're doing their best to ensure that the whole team and care providers all know our responsibilities remain the same to protect our patients' identification.
Yeah. So my last question for you is, what do you see as the most common security mistake in health organizations? And what do you recommend that they do to prevent it? So what is like this, like a reoccurring mistake that you're constantly seeing?
Well, let me build on what I was just talking about then, because it really is coming down to employee training. You know, there's other things that come up fairly frequently, but I'd say one real consistent theme is that you can put all the precautions in place and security systems that you can put in place and the monitoring and everything that you can do to secure your network and secure your building with the right locks and cameras and all that. But employees continue to be our top vulnerability and our largest potential point of failure. And one quick example of that is how much damage phishing emails are doing right now to the healthcare ecosystem. If you check on the Office of Civil Rights breach wall, where they report the kinds of breaches that have impacted over 500 patients, the vast majority of those are coming in as IT breaches. And the majority of those are being caused by an email that was open that should not have been open. So helping to educate and just make the staff very aware and really quite paranoid when it comes to opening emails that are from someone they don't know or look suspicious in any way. Just right before we started recording the podcast, they got an email that said that it was checking in on an invoice and it was a spreadsheet attached, but very clearly not from somebody that it looked like it was from, and the spreadsheet is a common tool used because they can bury macros in that. They can expose some vulnerabilities in your computer and that lets them into the network. So I would say when you ask me about the top opportunity for groups is to really take a hard look at the training programs that you're using, make sure that they're current, make sure that they explain what to look for when it comes to phishing emails and other types of vulnerabilities. And as I was saying earlier, just to make sure that they're aware on their current responsibilities. The world has changed. And so last year, they may have had a very clear idea of their responsibility to protect patient information. And this year, they may think, well, we're protecting everybody by knowing who in our building has COVID-19 or something like that, right? So we need this continuous refreshing training that's current and that's sharing what this is your responsibilities as a member of healthcare workforce. And I think that just can't be missed. So thanks for that question. That's where I would focus.
Definitely. I think that a lot of healthcare organizations think they need to pour a ton of money into complicated software programs or security systems. And really, it's so simple and you can boil it down to employee training and it doesn't even have to cost you a ton of money or finances. You just need to know exactly what to train them on. And I think it's about consistently reminding them and keeping them up to date and always informing them, hey, don't forget this. Don't open those phishing emails. They are scams. You know, if you keep on reminding them and just ingrain it into their mind, then even if they are busy with other things and trying to keep up on a ton of other things, especially during this time, they'll still remember. And it's about consistency. So yeah, that's a really good tip for all of our clinics and hospitals out there. Well, thank you so much, Joe. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today about telemedicine and COVID-19. It's been crazy since January, and I don't think it's going to slow down yet. So I'm excited to hear about what other information is going to come out in the upcoming months. So
thank you, Alexa. I enjoyed the conversation and appreciate the chance to talk about what we're learning here. And it will continue to evolve, as you said. So I'm sure we'll have another conversation soon.
All right. Bye. Thank you.
Thanks, Alexa. Bye.